Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:08 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is May 29th, and there was a lot of activity in markets in here today, and most particularly stock markets, which had initially sold off really quite aggressively, but recouped a good part of that decline by the close. The Dow Jones, in particular, has broken downwards from the 4-month range. And it's going to have to bounce pretty impressively tomorrow to signal a failed downside break. Then, when we think about what's going on in terms of, for example, the Nasdaq, then it was also in negative territory. It didn't recoup quite as much of the decline, but it is right in the region of the trend mean. The S&P 500 is also right in the region of the trend mean. This is a potential area of support. Then we have to consider that we had such an impressive advance up from the lows at the end of last year that some consolidation is normal. The size of that consolidation is going to be the biggest consideration, whether it can hold either the region of the trend mean or approximately half of the advance would be another way of looking at this. The much bigger question, though, is if it does drop below the trend mean, is it subsequently going to encounter resistance there, or is it going to push straight back up and through it? And that is the rather big question. Against all of that, what's happening in the bond market, I think, is of much more importance. And 10-year treasuries were in negative territory today, but not by very much, and recouped much of the decline by the close. Part of the reason for that was because there was an auction of 7-year notes, and it didn't go especially well. They didn't get nearly as many bids for them as they had anticipated. And that does highlight one of the idiosyncrasies of the bond market. This compression in yields, which is global in nature. For example, when we look at the pattern for UK gilts, for example, it has come straight through 1%, and it did close on the low of the day. German bunds are also still in negative territory. In fact, they are about as negative as we have seen in years, and the trend is still very much downwards. It really doesn't matter where we look, you're just going to see patterns of compressing yields. Well, that is the bond markets globally concluding that we're at the top of the interest rate cycle and signaling clearly that we are at a point where interest rates need to start coming down. And the question nobody knows is, exactly when is the Federal Reserve in particular going to decide that it is time to do that? Because right now they are still contracting their balance sheet, and it is on what was termed autopilot, and therefore they have said it's not going to stop contracting until September. Well, the market is starting to get a little jittery, and of course, that is also a factor of the consolidation that's underway against a background where we had had some really quite pronounced overbought conditions. So I think we are still in consolidation territory. We've also had a meaningful outperformance of really quite defensive sectors. For example, the S&P 500 consumer staples had rallied right back up to test its 2018 peak, and now we're getting some consolidation there. The utilities index has got the yield advantage relative to treasuries, but upward breaks have not been sustained over the course of the last 4 years, so it would be foolhardy to think that this one was going to be sustained. We do look like now there's going to be some consolidation, and this index has a history of dipping back below the trend mean. Then, when we look at, for example, the cloud computing sector, it has this ETF includes companies like Amazon, Facebook, and Netflix, but it also includes the pure cloud computing companies as well, and a process of mean reversion is going on here. This is not simply a sector that is benefiting from the secular advance and the effective provision of offshoring to services companies. It's not exactly offshoring, but it gives the same benefits as offshoring to services businesses. It also reduces costs, and in an environment where you have slowing growth, then that is a consideration. Well, when we look at the fact that the stock market does just look like it's consolidating right now, there doesn't seem to be a great deal of aggressive selling pressure in the major indices. And the VIX index has bounced from 15, but it is not yet surging higher. What we are definitely seeing, though, is some risk getting taken off the table in the bond markets. So the bond markets are much more alert to the tightening that's going on in terms of liquidity than the equity markets, and that is quite normal. The bond markets generally do tend to lead in terms of sensitivity to liquidity conditions. And the high yield spreads look eerily similar to what we saw back in 2015. We had a meaningful move on the upside, and then we had some consolidation, and then it started to pick back up again, and there was a significant surge, an almost doubling of the spread in the latter half of 2015. So now that the spread is back above the trend mean, if it continues to hold that move, well, we have to consider that some risk is being priced back into the high yield sector. And if we look at the price-based ETFs, then they're coming right back down now to test the region of their respective trend means. Well, the bond market is pretty much pricing in that there are going to be rate cuts. The big question is when those occur. The Federal Reserve tends to be data-dependent, which means that they're going to have to wait, or at least they have historically waited, until there is clear evidence of, in fact, seeing that the economy is contracting. By that stage, it will probably be too late to save the economy from contraction. So they need to move in an anticipatory manner, and that is very much against their way of doing things because of the uncertainty, and they run the risk of then being accused of inflating bubbles. And of course, that is where the potential is, that we are at a point where valuations are have improved, certainly, but that's contingent on earnings continuing to do better. And if we get slowing growth, well, then earnings will not do as well, and then the valuation would rise. So there is the potential here that we are going to have a more volatile period because the markets do not yet know when we're going to start to see interest rate cuts. And historically, if we particularly look at the last two occasions, it is generally when the yield curve starts to turn back upwards. And I've posted a report in here today from Morgan Stanley where they are promoting their adjusted yield curve spread to account for the impact of both quantitative easing and tightening. They contend that that yield curve was inverted back in December, and it has not moved out of inverted territory over the last 6 months. And considering that yield curve inversions tend to give a lead indicator of anything from 6 months to 18 months, they're on recession watch over at Morgan Stanley. Well, one thing we do know is that a flat yield curve is representative of tighter liquidity conditions. And when we look at the total assets of central banks, well, that's supportive of that conclusion. We've seen that this custom index has been trending downwards for most of the last few months. And it was at new lows in the middle of September, and it's coming back down to test those lows, but it is a clear, consistent downtrend. So that tells us that global liquidity is tightening. And a good part of the reason for that is because of the contraction of the Fed's balance sheet and the strength of the dollar. And the dollar was in positive territory again in here today. This has been a modest advance over the course of this year, but it is still advancing. And that is despite the fact that we've had some one-day downward dynamics that have almost universally been countermanded almost immediately afterwards. Then, I guess, going back to the main question, it's really the question is when is the Fed going to cut interest rates? What I also found interesting in here today was looking at the NYSE FANG index, because it did pull back at the beginning of 2018 and went right on to a new high and had a bigger pullback, but then did not quite get all the way back to 3,000 and is now back below the trend mean. Well, if we look at what the constituents of it are, then the big underperformers in here are Baidu, Tesla, Nvidia, Alibaba, and that those are obviously impacted by the trade war. Every one of them is impacted by the trade war in one way or another. Alibaba, as well, is talking about listing in Hong Kong and raising about $20 billion. Well, that's a big plug of additional supply for the share. And then this, it has now pulled back below the trend mean. The one constituent here that is doing somewhat better is Twitter, but some consolidation is certainly going on in here. Then, when we look at Baidu, well, they have made a one-way bet on artificial intelligence, and it does not appear to be doing their bottom line any good, and this is a very significant breakdown. What's I think also worth highlighting is that Tencent is not in that FANG index, but it has failed in the region of the trend mean. This is a significant trend in consistency relative to that impressive rebound we saw from the end of last year. And this is where the risks are, that some of these highly valued companies are coming under selling pressure. The selling pressure in Tesla has not yet abated, and it is re looking really quite oversold, but there hasn't been any pressure put on short sellers in here just yet, and that's following what is effectively a halving of the share price so far this year. So we do have evidence that there are some of these high-profile shares that are rolling over, and I think that is the biggest conclusion that we can draw, that it is at this point in the cycle where liquidity conditions are tightening, where people are legitimately starting to think about what will cause the next recession, whether it is China or Europe or Italy or slowing growth or the trade war. The eventual catalyst is rather beside the point compared to the fact that some of these shares are truly underperforming in here. And then that is, if one is holding shares that have got major trend inconsistencies and are encountering resistance in the region of their respective trend means, then that is a signal to start raising cash, regardless of what one thinks about the secular environment. I do think that we are in a secular bull market, but secular bull markets are punctuated by the occasional recession. When we think about what the potential is to lead us up and out of this corrective phase, then I think there is a scope here for technology to play a significant role there. But we're just not at that point yet. This corrective phase is still underway. There are going to be points of clear relative strength, and it is those points that are likely to be the better performers as we move up and out of a corrective phase. But the big question is what's going to happen in terms of the continued strength of the US dollar, because that is sucking liquidity out of the global economy, and that is most particularly I think, affecting the Chinese market. The A-share index is state-sponsored, so it is very much in the interests of the Chinese administration to try and create confidence in the outlook for the stock market. So we are continuing to see some support being put in there. The bigger risk is in the currency, and it does look like we're going to see it go back and test that 7 level. then when we think about what's going on in terms of Hong Kong, the H share index has been contracting pretty steadily now for the last month, and it has pulled back down into the range that it had broken out of. The big question now is whether it can find support around this 10,000 level or put in a higher reaction low. But this is rather acute volatility. Well, when we think about the trade war, then what we are starting to see now is that China is what I think we can only conclude as getting desperate. Because to play the rare earth metals card is very short-term oriented. The last time they did this was back in 2010, and it really feels like yesterday, but it was almost a decade ago. And the price of some of these shares went through the roof in a very short period of time because China cut off supply to Japan. I think the most important thing to remember is that rare earth metals are not especially rare. It's the refining capacity for them that's rare because it throws off radioactive isotopes. So the regulatory environment for refining those metals in many Western countries, in fact many countries full stop, is rather stringent, whereas China just doesn't care. And that's why the majority of refining for them is in China. But if they are signaling that they're willing to cut off supply to the USA, then just by making the threat, they're almost guaranteeing that there's going to be an effort, a much more serious effort underway now, to start developing domestic production and refining capacity for these metals, not just in the USA, but a number of other high-tech manufacturing locations. They are playing their rare earth metals card, but they are effectively going to end up destroying their dominance in this sector. This is extraordinarily short-term in nature. They will create some damage to the U.S. economy in the short term, but that isn't likely to last. And this is a rather desperate measure. I think that's the only way that we can classify it. What it also helps to highlight is that China's position in terms of negotiation is really quite weak, and that is part of the reason why the dollar continues to be quite firm. So there are a number of different facets to this particular story. Well, what it also tells us is that the risk in the trade war has certainly not disappeared, and that there is potential here for some of these quite depressed rare earth miners and explorer/developers to do significantly better from here as they start to attract inward capital. Now, when we look at some of the other commodities, well, the oil price in here today was off its lows. It needs to do better than this, but it is right in the region of the trend mean, so perhaps we could anticipate that we get some additional volatility around this area. It definitely needs to hold the lows put in over the last few days if potential for higher lateral ranging is to be given the benefit of the doubt. Then when we look at natural gas, well, the price is still really quite depressed, but it is at least finding some short-term support in the region of this psychological $2.50 area. Gold prices in here today were relatively unchanged, but continue to hold around this $1,275 area, which they've been doing for the last 6 weeks. But there is still a very clear downward bias to trading since the beginning of February, or the middle of February, and that is going to have to be broken in order to demonstrate that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And wheat prices were in negative territory in here today as well. And that is a downside key reversal. So what that suggests is that we're going to get some pause of consolidation. Meanwhile, soybeans were in positive territory. And they are continuing to unwind the oversold condition relative to the trend mean. But Again, that is really quite a significant inability to hold the intraday highs. So we are probably also going to be due some consolidation in here as well. Then coffee prices are coming back up towards this dollar area. And this is a meaningful move we've had over the last four sessions. It is starting to break the downward bias. Now, the big question is whether it is going to be able to push through that psychological $1 area and begin to break the downward bias and break the sequence of lower rally highs that's been in evidence since the end of 2016. But there is no doubting that we are at rather depressed levels in here right now. When we look at the performance of global stock markets, the vast majority were in negative territory. What's particularly interesting is that Mexico has been picking up. When we think about the potential for a trade war to intensify, then Mexico is one of the countries that is a very significant potential beneficiary, considering its manufacturing base and proximity to the US economy and the potential for the adjusted NAFTA treaty to be eventually passed by US Congress. That's still an outstanding question. But it's also worth highlighting that the Mexican peso has been pretty steady so far this year, and it was a bit firmer in here today. If the Mexican peso remains less of a talking point, then that should be generally beneficial for the economy. The other markets that are being touted as benefiting from the trade wars, one of them is certainly Vietnam, and that is continuing to consolidate in the region of, well, above its trend mean and has broken its downward bias. And then the Indian market, what is consolidating around the 12,000 level, and we're probably going to get some additional consolidation. When we think about what the outlook is for India, the BJP party has got a majority in the lower house, but they don't have a majority in the upper house, and they're not going to get an opportunity to get a majority in the upper house until 2020. So that may inhibit the pace of reform, whereas I think it is likely that there are going to be initiatives to support farmers and rural workers in India in this particular administration because they want to hold on to power. So when we think about what's going on out there in the world, there are certainly risks that are becoming increasingly more urgent because central banks have not yet started cutting interest rates. The longer they delay that decision, the greater the challenge is going to be to growth. We do have a flat yield curve, depending on how one defines it. There could be an inverted yield curve, and that is representative of tight liquidity. The central bank balance sheets chart is also contracting. That's tight liquidity. The strong dollar is tight liquidity. The banks are not particularly performing. And if, for example, we look at a World Bank index like the MSCI World Bank Index, then what we can see is that, and I need to type in the whole thing, I'm sorry about that. When we look at the performance of the banking sector on a global basis, then it is not doing particularly well. And that is something that needs to be taken into account, that it trended down all of last year, and then it encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean over the course of the last month. US banks have been doing better, but European banks have not. And the Chinese banking sector has been very much subject to, or at least dependent on, support from the Communist Party. And the S&P 500 banks index has so far failed to sustain a move back above its trend mean. So when we start to think about these, all of these charts, there is support for the view that global growth is slowing down. And that makes the market so much more sensitive to liquidity conditions. It is really on the The big question is, are central banks going to do anything about it before it's too late? This is the point where central banks really can have the potential to make a mistake. And that is, I think, the most significant risk that we have in the markets right now. And with that, I think I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.